I'll call to order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Monday, January 27th, 2003, and we are convened here for the purpose of an orientation meeting. And so what I'd like to do, we have all our members here with the exception of Representative Bates, and we're honored today to be joined by Representative March, who has an issue or an interest in education issues and has graciously agreed to join us on the dais this morning. Probably the first thing to do would be to start out with some kind of quick intros. And so if you could just do a short introduction that talks about your districts, the committees that you're assigned to, and your interest in the education area, that would be appreciated. And we can start with Senator Messerly.
Thank you. Yes, I am Ken Messerly. I'm in my second session, first term in the Oregon Senate. I served two terms in that House. My assignments this year are for Ways and Means, this committee, and chairing that resource sub. My interest in education, I've went through all of my undergraduate work at the Coosa School District. I graduated from Oregon State with a Bachelor of Science in Food Science. Went back to our family's ranch in Coquille and served on the Coquille School Board for 14 years. So. And my father served, I think, for a long time. He had the record in Oregon of the longest serving in a school district in Coosa Bay at 34 years. So I was raised with school boards.
Thank you. Senator Gordley.
Thank you, and good morning. Abel Gordley, Senate District 23, which includes wonderful neighborhoods in northeast and southeast Portland. My legislative history working with education issues goes back to my very first term in 91. In 93, I served on the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee under the late Frank Roberts, which was a remarkable experience, and later served on Ways and Means Education Subcommittee under Carolyn Oakley and then at least two other times I've had this assignment. In addition, I've served on the Policy Committee as well. I have a long-standing interest in educational issues that goes back to about 1978. 79 as a community activist working on school reforms in the Portland area, particularly focused on creating a quality, non-racist education for all children. And my concerns today remain the same. We're not there yet, but we certainly have made some gains. And my interest is also in accountability for how the dollars that we do have are spent and how those dollars get down to the classroom level or not.
Thank you. I'm Susan Morgan, and I represent House District 2, which is the central part of Douglas County and a little bit of Josephine and Jackson counties. My district is primarily rural. Roseburg is the largest city in my district with 20,000 people, and then the size of the towns drops quite a bit. After you cut Roseburg out of the picture, most of the other towns in my district are between 2,000 and 4,000 people, so very small towns, very rural. We're one of the districts that didn't really get to enjoy the prosperity that hit the Willamette Valley and the metro area over the last 10 years or so, and we're still trying to recover our economies from the withdrawal of the federal timberlands from the timber supply base. So poverty is a huge issue, and access into the education system is a big issue in my district. In this session, I serve on full Ways and Means. I serve as chair of the Education Subcommittee. I serve as a member of the Natural Resource Subcommittee under Senator Messily's direction, and I'm also a member of the Audit Committee under Representative Westland's direction, and we will be looking at issues related to the Oregon Health Plan. I come at my interest in education as a mom and as a grandmother. I have had three daughters that went through public school from K to 12 in Oregon. Two of them are now in the university system, and one of them is in community college. And so it has been something that I have had a great personal interest for a long time, and I think that we have issues to talk about this time with that are going to be, we're going to be able to have a depth of discussion that we haven't been able to have before because of the budget restraints that we face, and I'm very much looking forward to working with all of you on that. And with that, I will key up Representative Bates.
Thank you. I have a district that has changed dramatically in the last 2 years. I initially was in a district that included Eagle Point, Ashland, Phoenix, and Talent. I now have a district that's Ashland, Phoenix, Talent, and Jacksonville. A lot of people question why I get two of the finest eating areas in the state in Jacksonville and Ashland, being noted for the fine restaurants. And you'll see me probably gain 50 pounds in the next 6 months here. I spent 10 years on the school board in Eagle Point prior to being elected to state office. That's a school district of about 5,000 or 6,000 students, and it encompasses kids who are in some of the deepest poverty, social problems, and crime in Southern Oregon. That's one half of the district. The other half of the district is just the opposite, very rural, farm families primarily. So the mixture of kids at Eagle Point is really rather dramatic. The school districts I cover now are Medville School District, which is a large district, Ashland School District, Phoenix and Talent are the other ones. My interest in education goes back a long ways. I have five kids that have gone through the public system, and about seven or eight foster kids have gone through the same system. You'll occasionally see me wearing a green sweatshirt around here that says University of Oregon Dad. That's my $120,000 sweatshirt. I put three kids through U of O, and I got the sweatshirt. it cost about $120, but it's money well spent, a wonderful institution. In fact, I wore it for Dave Frohmeyer the other day. He didn't think it was as funny as I did, but anyway, he needs to develop more of a sense of humor. Having said that, I'm also a physician in Southern Oregon, so I deal a lot with people in poverty there, too. I feel that the public school system does some things extremely well, offering a good public education to many people. But I feel that it still fails to deal with our students, our Latinos in my area, that are people of minority, that are a minority as far as socioeconomic standards are concerned, too. And that's the area I'm most concerned about. Those are the kids that are not graduating from our schools and not getting good education, and those are the ones I'm most concerned about in our system right now. Thank you.
Representative T.D. Smith.
Thank you. House District 18, 9 from the Molalla area. We have a farm, Christmas Tree Farm. I am educated. I hold a degree from Concordia University in Portland in management communications. I have a background in journalism, newspaper editor, and so forth. State director of the Oregon Lands Coalition, but most recently I was a librarian in my daughter's elementary school. And that was quite an education for me to see what was going on in our school system. And at that point, I became, of course, very much an advocate of our public schools. Hope to do a lot of work in this arena, on this committee. In my district, which entails Molalla, Silverton, Mount Angel, Hubbard area, is mainly rural farm agriculture, timber-related. We also have a growing Hispanic population that needs to be as educated as much as anybody does. My first political awareness came in the late 80s with the listing of a spotted owl. And in my district, timber receipts paid for our schools. We had some schools in the Molalla area who did not collect taxes because the timber paid for them. Once our timber left, our schools declined, and that support has not been put back as a supply, and that's a very, very sad thing in the state. So education, and when those high-paying family wage jobs were taken away, were not replaced. So the other avenue is education, and it's a very a key interest for me.
Thank you. Representative March.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your allowing me to sit in, and I'm going to try to attend as often as I can. I went to a two-room schoolhouse, so I've got a rural background. I have teaching certificates in Oregon and California. I taught in a secondary schools as a substitute while I was trying to find a full-time job, and that never quite worked out. But in Oregon, I've taught in Deschutes County Schools and in Washington County Schools. I also have a master's and a doctorate from Portland State in urban studies with a specialization in gerontology. So I bring both an interest in K through 12 and higher education. I serve on the audit committee as vice chair with you, and also on trade and economic development, and interested in getting the economy moving in places like Moala as well as Portland. And I have district, my school district, I have two school districts, David Douglas and Portland Public, and I have one school with 27 language groups. So they have a challenge there all the way up. So I have from low income to moderate upper income areas in my district.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.
This is going to be a short meeting today, and as you know, we also have challenges because we haven't adopted full Ways and Means rules yet. So I'm anticipating that we won't have a meeting tomorrow and that we actually will begin working on Wednesday. I just wanted to make a few comments on my orientation to the committee as the chair of the committee. And I think that one of the things that we all recognize and is becoming clear to us as we have gone through the governor's balanced budget is that the revenue expectations that that budget was built on are optimistic revenue expectations. The co-chairs have instructed us that we will not be budgeting to that level, and so we're going to have a challenge in this committee to figure out where we're going to be able to put the money. I do think it would be reasonable, and it's the co-chair's request, that we build an add-back list of things that we would add back into the budget if we find that the we have the revenue to do that. I also would like to build a takeaway list so that if we find ourselves in the opposite situation, we'll have the basis for a discussion on where to make further economies in what we do. I feel very strongly that it's important to have this committee be as open as possible, and I would welcome anyone in the system, any of the senators or representatives that have an interest in the issues that we're addressing, to come and sit with the committee as Representative March is, and people should feel very welcome to do that. So if you're approached by members of your caucuses that are interested in coming, please extend that invitation to them. We have tremendous problems here in this budget area, and this is because of the fact that we have less revenue coming to the state, and because of the impact that the public employees retirement system budget has on this budget area. This isn't going to be an easy part of the budget to work our way through. And I think that this sub and the human services sub are going to be two subs in which there is a lot of emotion attached to the discussions. We're talking about the future of families, children's futures, and the future of the state of Oregon. And as you know, the co-chairs have us on a very aggressive time schedule to be done with the hearings in all of the budget areas that we have. So in order to accommodate what I think is a very critical aspect of public input on this, I'm going to be asking members to come and sit through public input sessions that are going to be outside of the normal formally scheduled meetings of this committee. I think it's important to have opportunities for people that work to come in the evenings or on weekends and talk to us about their feelings and their issues with the budget that we're having. So just kind of a heads up that I will be asking people to make that sacrifice. I would also ask us to remember that we're budgeting for the entire education spectrum here, that we have K to 12, we also have the community college systems and the higher ed systems and all the other pieces that flow into that. And there has been a great deal of discussion and stress put on the K to 12 system, but that is a piece of the education continuum in the state, and that we need to be mindful that there is a continuum here, and we'll be discussing all of it. Does anyone wish to make comments on any of this or add anything to the discussion? I hope that we would recognize that we all come from very different perspectives and very different backgrounds, and all of our experiences are going to be very valid and valuable to the discussions that we have. So it's my intention to run a very open committee with all issues being on the table. And with that, I would just like to kind of set that tone as we go through this difficult session that we're going to have. The last thing on the agenda, Steve Bender from the Legislative Fiscal Office has been given the task of keeping this committee moving along and on schedule. And so what I'd like to do now is just allow Steve to take us through the kind of an overview of what the committee's going to be working on and a little bit of things from the 40,000-foot view that we're going to be looking at. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Steve Bender from Legislative Fiscal. I'm very pleased to be serving on your staff this session. As the chair mentioned, you do have a very difficult and challenging budget ahead, and all of us in LFO want to be able to work with you to provide you the information that you need in order to make the decisions that you'll have to make. So please use our services, and when you do have questions, that's what we're here for. We're here to help get you the information that you need in order to make your decisions. If I may just start off by talking about the staff who you will see coming before you in this subcommittee during this session. There will only be one person from LFO that you'll see every day, and that is your committee assistant, Dolores Wisbrock, who is back there recording the meeting for you. She will be here every day for each meeting. For the budgets, in most cases, the budget analysts that you will have working with you in the subcommittee are myself and Sue McGlashan. Sue does the K through 12 budget, and I do the post-secondary education budgets. And together, those, of course, take up most of the time, and will take up most of the time of your subcommittee work. There also, however, will be other analysts who will be coming in here from LFO to deal with health-related licensing boards and the state library, which are also in your schedule. Those are Rick Olson, Cindy Jones, and Kathy Miller. And in fact, They will be the ones who will be here first, because I just want to talk a little bit about the outline, the subcommittee's work plan, and how you'll be working through this as it is planned so far. In order to do that, I've distributed two items to you, so that you should see two items here. And if you look at the item here with the list on it, this list is essentially in bill form, gives you the subcommittee work plan for this legislative session. These are the budget bills and related fee bills that will be assigned to the subcommittee, are presumably being assigned right now since the full committee adopted the temporary rule. And if you look at this, you'll see that there looks like there are an awful lot of bills here. But if I can switch here to this sort of PowerPoint presentation, If you look at the second page here, this is perhaps an easier to read list of the budgets that the subcommittee is going to be charged with coming up with recommendations to the full Ways and Means Committee for. And basically, these are K through 12 through post-secondary, plus a couple of other agencies that don't fall into that category. For the Department of Education, there are actually three budget bills that you'll be working on separately. The first is for the Department of Education's operations. So that's the bill that finances the functions of the staff of the Department of Education, that finance also the schools for the blind and the deaf, which are actually state schools. These aren't schools that are run by school districts. They're actually run by the state government. They're state employees. They're financed in that budget. There's also debt service on bonds in that budget. But that will be a particular separate bill that you will be, budget bill that you will be working on. The second budget bill within the Department of Education is the budget for the grant and aid, which provides funding for a number of programs that assist school districts in particular programs that they are operating. The third item on that list is the one that's by far the largest in terms of dollars of anything on this list, and indeed largest in terms of anything in state government finance, and that is the state school fund, which is the provision of general fund support to support school district and ESD operations throughout the state. But then there are also the post-secondary budgets you'll be looking at. There's a budget for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. The primary support, state support dollars in that budget are distributed directly to the community college districts to help support their operations. The Department of Higher Education's budget will come to you in the form of two bills, one bill for the operations of the Oregon University System and a separate bill for capital construction projects. The state constitution requires that capital construction projects be considered in a separate bill, so that is why those are coming to you in separate bills. You might notice at this point that there is no capital construction bill for the Department of Education or community colleges because there are no capital projects financed in the governor's budget, so there's no need for bills for that. However, there are capital projects financed at the Oregon University System in the governor's budget, so there is a separate capital construction bill, and this is traditionally how it has been. This isn't a change from how things have been done in the past. The other another budget that you will be considering are the Oregon Health and Science University Public Corporation grants. That wording may sound kind of funny to you, but the reason why it's written that way is OHSU is not a state agency at this point. They were reorganized several years ago as an independent public corporation, and you do not approve the OHSU budget as you do for these other agencies. Rather, the state supplies funding to help support OHSU operations, and there is a bill to continue doing that this session. The next agency you will work on, and these are not in sequential order, these are sort of in order of K-12 through post-secondary, is the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. This commission administers financial aid programs for post-secondary students. These are loan and grant programs. And in terms of state general fund support, what the primary use of general fund in this budget is used for, about 95% in fact, is used for the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program, which is the state's financial aid program in support of lower income students at community colleges and public and private universities. Then there are also three non-education budgets that are assigned to the subcommittee to help equalize workload with the other subcommittees. Those are the Oregon State Library, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, which is actually, that actually is an education program. However, there's no general fund in that. It's entirely fee-supported. And finally, a number of items that really are not helpful education related at all, but they are assigned to this budget, and these are the health-related licensing boards. The way that the schedule, tentative schedule is as of now, is that it will take 4 weeks until you have your first education, major education general fund budget. At first, the subcommittee will be looking into the budgets of the health-related licensing boards, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and the Oregon State Library. And the reason for this is these are budgets that do not have significant amount, I shouldn't say significant, I should say large amounts of general fund in them. In fact, none of them have any general fund except the state library budget. But when there'll be some, after that, by the end of February, we'll start getting into the education budgets themselves, and we'll work on that for the rest of the session.
Mr. Bender, if I could interrupt. There was an issue related to DAS being able to roll the salary increases out of the budgets of the boards and commissions because of their need to get into the PIC system and do all the work. Has there been a timeline put on when they're going to be able to do that?
We are not expecting DAS to be able to have their analysis done for, I believe, a couple weeks. I know that the analysts who have these budgets that are coming up right away, like in the next couple days, are trying to calculate this independent of the DAS calculations. The co-chairs have mentioned that the subcommittees will not be able to go into work session at least immediately until there are permanent rules adopted, and we do not now anticipate having a work session at all this week. By next week, you may have a work session or partial work sessions, but these particular issues may not be able to be resolved immediately, and you may have to come back to these budgets or delay taking final action on these budgets until these calculations can be made and finalized.
Thank you. Representative Messer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, of these licensing boards, are those all other funds, or is there any general fund involved?
They are entirely other funds.
Does that include teacher standard practices?
That is also other funds.
And I assume the state library incorporates general funds.
The state library does have some general fund and also has other funds, both.
Thank you.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bender, this would be a heads up for the health-related occupational licensing boards. We passed a bill last session that required the boards to increase their efforts around diversity, adding diversity to these licensing boards and to the commission. And as we get reports on the budget aspect, would like to hear what progress has been made. And I don't recall the bill site, but
Thank you, Senator. I don't recall that bill either. If we do have time, I would like to go a little bit into the format of the presentations that we've asked all agencies to present. And one item that we do expect agencies to present is their affirmative action report. And I don't know if that would provide all the information that the bill would have them, requires them to, but we will. I will mention that to the analysts doing those agencies.
That would be
have
very
them look
helpful.
That over.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Senator Gordley, it may be a thought that if you could go in and talk to the analysts about what will be involved in the affirmative action report and make sure that that's going to meet your information mm-hmm. needs, I'd be grateful if you do that.
I'd be happy to do that. Thank you.
Please
thank you.
Continue.
So please hang on to this list. This indicates the analyst for each agency. So if there's ever a time when you have a question about a particular agency and you're not sure who would be the person who knows about this, this list would let you know. Of course, if you don't have this list or you can't remember, just call us and we'll tell you. But this does show who will be handling the various budgets during this legislative session. Continuing with this item, if you look at the second page here, you'll see that there's something called labeled the co-chair budget development plan. And I just wanted to point out a few things here. The chair already mentioned a number of these issues here, so I will go through this very quickly. But One thing that the co-chairs have asked subcommittees to do is to look at prioritizing reductions for the various budgets because of the fact that they are concerned that the budget may be spending essentially too much money for the following reason. What the governor's budget is put together to essentially spend all of the funds that the December revenue forecast projects to be realized during the next two-year period. It maintains a $21 million ending balance, so there is a small ending balance there. But essentially the governor's budget, which we will be talking about a little bit more today, spends the money that's available. The co-chairs are concerned, especially given what happened last session, that the forecast may turn down again. And $21 million isn't a big enough cushion to deal with a potential drop in forecast. So they have asked or directed subcommittees to build budgets that assume that there's a 10% revenue growth this biennium compared to last biennium. What the governor's budget is assuming is approximately a 14% growth. So by taking back or budgeting at a lower level of expenditures, this would leave a 3% ending balance instead of a $21 million ending balance, which is less than 1%. What this means is that in order to meet this target, to provide a cushion, the budgets that you have before your subcommittee would have to be reduced in total by approximately $250 million from the amount in the governor's recommended budget. So that would be the Education Committee's subcommittee's proportion of building this 3% ending balance. And the way that the co-chairs are asking you to do this is realizing that this is going to be a very difficult, none of these decisions are going to be very easy, to take a budget that's already tight and to start looking at finding additional reductions in order to provide some more fiscal stability. They will be asking you to develop prioritized add-back lists for all of these agencies. So when you present information to the full committee that meets the budget targets, you will also be providing information that our top priority, if additional funds are available, is this program, and our next priority is that program. And we, the staff, will be working with you to help you come to these decisions, and we'll, of course, be maintaining this information so it's a part of the record and it's available in case people have questions as to what your decisions were or you have questions and you need to rework things. We will continually update you on this process. The co-chairs have also made some other preliminary decisions about the budget situation of the state. I'm looking here under the part of this page that says budget target strategy. The last bullet item there is that they've determined that under the current fiscal situation, the state really does not have an ability to fund inflation adjustments and salary increases that have been built into budgets that are coming to you from the governor. Typically, these are in budgets, and in this particular case, this particular budget cycle, the governor has already taken out portions of things that would have been in if you were here, you know, in 2001 or 1999, inflationary adjustments and salary increases that would have been in at that budget. Some of them are already out, but the co-chairs are saying that we really can't fund even the stuff that's still in there. So LFO will be looking through and identifying for you what types of inflationary increases are still remaining in budgets, so that you can look at those and make determinations as to removing those.
If I could have a question, Madam Chair.
Senator Messerly, rather.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, if you could give us a little bit of clarification, maybe at this point you can't, but I just want to state that I'm very concerned of what this statement you just made about the impacts we're going to have on our, particularly K-12 budgets, where we have very little authority over those expenditures. We don't negotiate with the staffs at the local level. And I'm very concerned that we have a process here, Madam Chairman, that are very clear to the local school boards of where this is going to end up as soon as possible, because they are in a situation, I think we're over half of them, around half of them at least, have already got contracts, and it's going to be very difficult for them to open those contracts. And I think we just need to be as crystal clear as we can with the governor, who's already made the statement that this is a burden that is being put on the local government that they should be dealing with as soon as possible. Because I can see if we don't get our budgets out till June or July, and if that's the deadline that they're looking at, thinking that maybe this will be resolved and they won't have to face that situation, it could be a real disaster for our local school districts.
Senator Mesley, I concur, and I think that there is going to be an element of inelegance that's inherent in doing this, because the information that I've got is that about a third of the districts are in somewhere in a contract that's playing itself out right now. A third of them are in the process of negotiating a contract, and a third of them don't have a contract. So, you know, especially for that third of the people that are somewhere in a contract that's been negotiated, renegotiating the terms of that is going to require a lot of give on one side of the equation. And I think that we need to recognize the difficulty in that. But I think also that the school districts and the community colleges and the higher ed folks need to recognize the budget constraints that we're within here, and the fact that education is a real people-intensive business, and that upwards of 85% of these budgets are personnel costs. And so if we can't make the economies in that part of the budget, we're kind of hamstrung in the big picture, because there isn't a lot of other places to go. But I think your point's well taken, that we are well served to make that statement up front, that we can't work with the amount of money that we work with unless there is a discussion at the local level about how the money is being spent in terms of salaries and loading costs. Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bender, do the budget targets assume staff cuts aside from hiring freezes and aside from adding no new positions?
The targets do not explicitly assume that. However, given the amount of cuts that would be necessary to reach the targets, it may not be able to avoid staff cuts. We don't have information for that yet. The targets have just recently been developed, and we are just going to start working on those.
Just a comment about that for our committee, and this goes to the progress that we've made as a state under affirmative action. And there is an analysis from the previous governor's director of affirmative action, which says that budget cuts and staff reductions may erode the progress that we've made thus far. The last one on, first one off practice, will have a negative impact on women, people of color, and people with disabilities. And so I cite that just as something for us to take into consideration in our future discussions about budget cuts and staff reductions.
Thank you. And again, Senator Gordley, please feel very free to go in and make sure that the analysts have an understanding of the information that you need in the budget discussions.
Absolutely.
Further comments? Please continue, Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, in the budget, we will be looking very closely at any vacancies that agencies have, and we will be assuming that there is no need to fill those vacancies in the upcoming biennium unless the agency is able to convince otherwise. This is slightly different than how we have done this in the past. We've always looked at vacancies and tried to determine which ones could be made permanent and which ones really were just being held open and needed to be filled. It was just a period of time where it was taking time to recruit a new person into that position. But because of the budget situation, we'll be looking at this more strictly and really putting the onus on agencies to convince the subcommittee that there is a need to fill a vacant position and that they cannot function without that position being filled for the for the upcoming biennium. Just a few other things. I'm sort of going to be moving more quickly down this list.
Let me interject comment, Mr. Bender. In the over the last regular session and then through the discussions that we had in the interim and the five special sessions, the four times that we've had to resize budgets, the issue about vacant FTE came up a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm personally very interested in looking at this issue. And there is an issue of positions that are funded that don't have any bodies associated with them, but the money is used to cover some other cost. And usually those costs are worthy of discussion. So I'm hoping that as we step through the vacant position issue, we have an opportunity here to do what I call is truthing up budgets so that we can actually talk about where we need the money to go instead of hiding it behind a position. We can talk about what that money really goes to do and have it put that way in the budget so it becomes very clear just what we've got to work with.
I would, thank you, Madam Chairman. I would support the chair on that very much. If a department is going to become, for instance, before me and make the case that they need to fill the position, it's going to have to be a very, very strong case. I'm not saying my mind is already made up ahead of time, but all functions would have to cease practically in order for me to justify filling any vacancies at this time.
Well, I want to note, too, that this isn't an issue that is only germane to the education arena. This is an issue that needs to be taken into consideration on all the whole spectrum of funding of state government and all state agencies. But we definitely, I think, need to work diligently on that issue in this subcommittee. Mr. Bender.
Another item that will be stressed in this budget process, this biennium, is the agency performance measures and trying to tie more closely their budget to these performance measures. They will actually, part of the Ways and Means process this session, which is a change from prior sessions, is you will be asked to actually ratify the performance measures that agencies are using. So they will be presenting them to you, and you will be making a determination whether these are really the measures that you think are important for the agency to be following or whether you expect them to change their measures or modify them to something that you think is more reflective of the public need.
Madam Chair.
Representative March.
Thank you. As a former performance auditor, I'm extremely interested in this. And will you be going to bringing in some research from various states who have good performance measurements and using them to help suggest to DAS what to use, or is this completely department-driven?
Well, Representative, this is probably, to be honest, more department-driven in the sense that there has been a process during this legislative interim whereby all agencies have submitted their performance measures to the Progress Board and DAS, who have set up a committee to actually review these performance measures. So in some sense, they've been less independent at the agency level than before because the central administration has been looking over these and have, in many cases, already told agencies to modify their performance measures. This is sort of the next step. Now that the administration has looked over these performance measures, to get the legislature to look into them as well, and this is the committee that will be doing that. for all agencies. It will be Ways and Means. We will, of course, to the extent that there are questions and you need information from other states, we will attempt to provide that. But the main process has been so far that there has been considerable review of this already at the administrative level, and we will be reporting on what the outcome of those reviews have been, and then having you look at that to see whether that's acceptable to you or not. That does, though, bring up the next item on this list, which is program comparison, not so much the...
Representative March, I know you've done work on this area too, so if you have research in that area, we could get it into the loop of where all these discussions are going to be going on. We'd appreciate receiving that.
Thank you, Madam.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, you mentioned in your opening remarks that you were also going to be asking agencies to have on their list not only add backs, but should we have further reductions, and I think that's appropriate faced with the fact that we are looking at staring in the face in this country of going to war. We also have other threats of terrorist attacks and could have very damaging effects on our economies. And I noticed that it's not mentioned here, Mr. Bender, but I think that's important that those departments do come to us with that in mind, so that I think we should have the information to go both ways.
I concur, Senator Messerly, and what I'm thinking about is what torture it was to go four times through budgets and try to make economies in them without having any kind of cohesive plan about where was a reasonable direction to go in. Now, given we had the difficulty of going into that with the thinking that we were in a kind of a short, shallow recession, and that's not how things turned out. But I think that there is a viable discussion to be had around if we find ourselves in the second year of the biennium with budgets that outstrip our ability to fund them, where should we be looking at places to make the economies? So I do want to have that part of it introduced. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just a quick comment, Steve, so you kind of know at least where I hope I'm coming from. I found that agencies and government entities and school districts and sites have a tendency to put performance measures in that they like. They reach the performance measures, but the outcomes never seem to get to where we want them to be. And I'm concerned that when we look at these performance measures, we're more focused on the outcomes than we are the performance measures, and that we have some way of looking at the outcomes on a non-biased basis to see if we really are making progress in areas. When I think about school dropout rates, things of that nature, that's what I'm concerned about. You could make the school dropout rate, as an example, look like 3 or 4% if you measure it a certain way. If you measure it by raw students, it might look quite different. And that's the kind of gaming that goes on that makes it difficult for us to really get our hands around whether something is improving or not. So I'm let you know that in this area, as in other areas in healthcare and elsewhere, I'll be looking at outcomes, raw outcomes, and trying to get objective ones, not just what the agencies are putting forward. Thank you.
I think there would be value in having a discussion about how the outcomes, the results of the performance measures, what has gone into the formula that comes up with the final number. And this would certainly be a viable committee to take a look at those issues. Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Mr. Bender, as I look at the performance measures issue overall, in reading the governor's budget approach, he does link his education budget to 12 or 13 of the key Oregon benchmarks, as I read the budget. And so are you saying that as we are looking at the performance measures, we are also explicitly looking at Oregon benchmarks? Because I don't think I heard that phrase.
Not exactly. The agencies have developed performance measures, and some of these or these measures are generally linked to the Progress Board's Oregon benchmarks. My understanding is that you will be asked to look specifically at the agency performance measures, and if you direct an agency to modify its measures, that would not directly change the Oregon benchmarks per se, but this would be information then that the Progress Board essentially would be getting back from the legislature that, you know, we think these are the important things, and you know, to the extent that they might use that information to modify a benchmark, that would be a separate process.
Okay. That context is helpful, I think. The Oregon benchmarks are still the overarching framework?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Representative March.
Thank you. I just want to comment that I think the committee is going right to the crux of good performance measures, and that's you link your performance measures. The data has to be good. It has to be solid. It has to have outcome measurements, not just input. We used to count how many people we served. We did not say how well we served them. And so that's the key, and it has to be linked to our broader goals, the benchmarks that we're trying to achieve. I'm really impressed here, so thanks.
Mr. Bender.
Another change from last session is that the co-chairs have requested that you look more at program comparisons with other states. So as you're looking at, well, how is higher ed doing? How is K through 12 doing? How is their funding working? They want you to look at how other states are doing this to see if this provides some new ideas for budgeting here in Oregon. And so we will be working with agencies and on our own to make sure that there are comparative information available for you so that when you do get budgets before you, you will be seeing information on other states and some ways of comparing what we're doing here in Oregon in this budget that's before you with how other states are doing this. Finally, future forecast adjustments. And this relates somewhat to what Senator Messerly was mentioning earlier. After the March and the May forecasts are released, the co-chairs envision changing these target budgets to reflect those changes. So in the event that the March forecast is down or up, there would be at that point, a change in the targets. So if you had already been working through some type of priority list and you now see that there's either more money available or less money available than you thought, you would therefore be able to adjust your recommendation to the full committee to reflect that.
Representative Tudis.
Thank you. Steve, I will caution the committee that the March forecast is flat or even slightly up, that we just not go hog wild and think this is going to be a trend. I will continue our good budgetary work along those lines because, Representative Morgan, I don't want to see myself back in here for another summer. I kind of enjoy summer vacations once in a while. I haven't had one in many years, so with that in mind, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bender.
And finally, the co-chairs are envisioning at this point a process that would continue even after sine die, whereby interim budget committees could review the priorities that you have established during session so that in the event that there's an upturn in the economy, potentially you could meet in special session and do the reverse of what you were doing in special sessions this past interim and actually approve increases if you've identified programs that you feel you really need to fund more, and if there's any funds available, you would want those to be considered. So this would set up a process to hopefully, in either direction, if there's a need for special sessions again, which we hope, of course, is not the case, that you know, there would be a process involved that would help facilitate that process if it were necessary.
Questions or comments? Shall we talk about formats?
Okay. The next three or four pages is the information that we've provided to agencies as to how they are supposed to format or make their presentation to you. Unless you would like, I will not go into great detail on this, except to say that the format is actually quite similar in structure to how it was last session. That is to say that we would start each agency with the LFO analyst basically reviewing what the agency does and talking about how the agency is funded. And then the agency head would go in and discuss the agency's missions and goals, their performance measures, and what's been happening to them. And then we would go into a discussion of the governor's recommended budget, first from the BAM analyst, and then from the agency going in more detail as to what it would be able to do or what it would be doing to implement the governor's recommended budget. There are many changes in the overall structure. I don't know, for those of you who served on Ways and Means last session, how well your memory is of how that structure was. I think once it gets started again, and if you're not remembering that well, it'll probably become, you know, clear to you. But please, if there are any, you know, if at any times you're having concerns about the presentations and you don't seem to be getting the information that you need, please make sure to let us know, and you know, we can modify these and ask agencies to modify how they're presenting information so that it will be more useful to you. As the chair mentioned, the co-chairs have set out a very aggressive schedule for completing hearings, at least, and looking into these budgets. We're expected to be done by before the end of April, which, as you know, is much more quickly than has been the case. Because of that, all of what we've scheduled, or we're asking all agencies to reduce the amount of time that they make their presentations from what they did last session. So in some sense, we're asking for a little more information, but we're asking it to be presented in less time. So more of this will be presented to you in the form of written documentation that will not be explicitly presented to you in the subcommittee. You would have to look over this on your own, and we'll try to focus in the presentations to move things quickly, but to get you the information that you really need in order to make your budget decisions.
Madam Chair. Senator Gordley, before I'd just like to interject one comment that as we work our way through these budgets, we're all going to come up with ideas that we have or information that would help us in our own minds clarify. And I would submit to you that if it's information that you think you need, there's probably more than one person on this committee that would benefit from seeing it. So please come forward and talk to me, and we'll talk to the analysts and get that information organized and out on the table so that we can look at it and talk about it. So what I'm trying to say here is the LFO is going to do a great job of giving us information, but we're going to have some needs too, and we need to get those definitely factored into the flow. Senator Gordon.
Just a historical comment, Madam Chair, and for the committee, and Steve's been around a long time and will appreciate what I'm going to say. Back in 93, when I first started my work with the legislature and serving on Ways and Means Subs, our approach to getting this information from state agencies was very fragmented and terribly unorganized. And having served on one of the committees that helped develop this format, this is a huge leap forward in helping all of us move away from that fragmented, looking at information in silo approach. And while our time may, given what you said about time constraints, et cetera, that said, our approach to looking at the information is going to be much more organized. And I really appreciate that, understanding where we've come from.
Representative Bates.
Can I make this a personal note here? I'm going to apologize to this committee and to the chair for leaving to testify on a bill in another committee, and now I have to leave again to be on a talk radio show in South Oregon. so I ask your forbearance allowing me to leave again, and I won't be leaving committee all the time like this. This is very unusual.
I am considering putting a policy in place that people that leave the committee to do radio shows have to bring donuts to the next committee.
I will do that. I'll see you at the next meeting with my donuts. Okay.
I think, Doctor, we better
add some chocolate.
We better put at least 60 pounds on that instead of 50.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further comments? Mr. Bender.
Well, if you'll indulge me with a little more time of your time, I'd like to just do a very, you had mentioned a 40,000-foot overview of the education budget. It's probably more like a 200,000-foot overview, but just a very brief setting the stage of where the budget is. Before I get to that, just two very quick comments about, again, the committee functioning. LFO will be providing your offices with a weekly schedule for the upcoming week every Thursday or Friday. We were not able to do that last week because of the fact that we didn't have committee rules and we couldn't have bills assigned. But please be on the lookout for that. If you have any trouble finding it or whatever, if you ever have any questions about the schedule, call me. But you should be getting that delivered to your offices so you will know what the upcoming schedule is. Just as the chair mentioned, there will be no meeting tomorrow. We were not able to schedule we didn't have bills assigned to us in time to schedule that. But starting on Wednesday, you will have public hearings on two of the health-related licensing boards. Those are the Board of Naturopathic Examiners and the Board of Occupational Therapists. So those will be the first two boards that will start on Wednesday. And we will get a schedule for the rest of the week to your offices today, so you'll be able to see what's scheduled for Wednesday.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, I'm a little bit concerned. If we don't get our schedules for the following week till Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, if we have an important bill coming up on Monday, it's not going to give us much time to prepare. I know we've all got pretty tight schedules. Mm-hmm. Could we work that to where, the later part in the week, I'm not concerned at all, but for that Monday or Tuesday work, it might be good if we could be notified a little bit earlier.
Okay.
Particularly since I think both the House and Senate is trying to get people out of here by Friday noon.
Okay.
In most cases.
We will do that, Senator.
So would it be possible then to kind of look at a rolling week rather than a calendar week?
Okay. Yes.
Would that meet your needs?
I think so.
If I could ask you, please, to go back to this handout,
mm-hmm.
To this diagram here. This is actually a repetition of something that you saw during the full committee orientation, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I do want to indicate to you, just to set the stage, that the budgets that you will be looking at here are the ones that in this pie chart are in the dark. Those are the bottom ones. The state school fund, which is by far the largest with 43% of discretionary funding. The Oregon Department of Education, I do apologize for these acronyms, but that's the Department of Education's other expenditures. So those would be its operations and its grant and aid, which are 3% of the budget. And then the post-secondary education budgets, which together represent 13%. And you can see the division there. Community colleges is 4%, the higher ed system is 7%, OHSU is 2%, and the Student Assistance Commission is not actually zero, but it rounds to zero. It's less than half of 1% of the budget goes to the Student Assistance Commission. What this means is, one definition, first of all, we use the term...
Mr. Bender, if I could interject, there are some very nervous folks sitting in the back of the hearing room when they see 0% of the commission. Rounding.
It's rounding, yeah.
The term that we're using here, 59% of state discretionary funds, as you go through these budgets, you'll see very quickly that the state has two kinds of funds. There's some funds that are clearly dedicated to a particular purpose, and you can't use those for another purpose. So when you look at the budget of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and you see that they have licensing fees on teachers, you can't take that money and start using it to support the community college budget or something like that. What we're really looking at here is the discretionary funds, those funds where you are able, if you so choose, to move them from one area to another. And these discretionary funds consist of the following. Most of them are the general fund. So the general fund is the biggest portion, and the second biggest portion are lottery funds. So those are the two big ones. But there are a number of other funds that are fungible, as like the general fund, that we include in here. And some of those would be monies from the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement. These are the funds that the state receives from tobacco companies as part of an agreement with all states. Another would be the Medicaid Upper Payment Limit, or the MUPL monies. You may have heard a lot of them last session. You won't be hearing as much about them this time because they're phasing out. And the amount of them is diminishing. There are only $73 million left this biennium. And the governor puts all of them in K-12. And you may not really hear much about MUPL for the rest of this session because there's not enough, you know, this is way down from last session and there just isn't enough to worry about. Some other funds would be bonds. There are certain bonds, such as bonds on the tobacco settlement, and payment shifts. All of these are things that were used to provide more funding to support the state budget. And this pie chart includes all of those types of funds. So it's a bit broader than just the general fund.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, I haven't seen the bill yet, but I've been lobbied that the community colleges are coming forth with the bonding bill, I believe, that would allow them to do capital construction. Is that, you mentioned it earlier in your overview, is that an issue that we'll be dealing with here in this committee?
You would deal with that. If you choose to support that, that would go through this subcommittee. The governor's budget does not include any bonding for community college facilities. So these are the governor's budget numbers, and there are no figures for community college bonds in here because those are not in the governor's budget.
Thank you.
This next chart, which is labeled Change in State Support from 2001 Certain Levels, is, I think, an interesting chart, but it takes a little explaining to make it clear what this is really trying to show. If I can start by the explaining, looking at the bottom, and just making sure it's clear what these acronyms are. I use them all the time, and I know that for people who don't, sometimes it's not clear exactly what they are. But SSF is the state school fund. That's the support that goes to the school districts and ESDs. ODE stands for Oregon Department of Education. So this is the funds that go to the Department of Education, but not through the state school fund. These are either the grant aid or the operations or the debt service. CCWD is community colleges. It stands for Community Colleges and Workforce Development. OUS, Oregon University System, OHSU. OSAC is the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And the education program, that's probably the one that's the least clear. What that is that's actually all six of these together. So that's the whole education program area combined. What this chart is showing is, I'd ask you first to just look at the dark bars and not to look at the lighter color ones. Just, assume that pretend they're not there for now. What these show you is what the funding is in the governor's recommended budget compared to the amount that you adopted in the 2001 regular session. So in the 2001 session, before all the special sessions, when you passed budgets, before you knew that we were going into this recession, you provided a certain amount of money for these agencies. The darker bars indicate what the upcoming budget looks like compared to that. So for example, the state school fund appropriation is about 3% less in the governor's budget than it was 2 years ago when Yusaini died. So there's an actual drop there of about 3%.
So just to clarify then, zero is where we were at the end of the last regular session.
Exactly. Okay. Now this, of course, is before the $250 million that this subcommittee is being asked to take out of budgets in order to leave a more reasonable ending balance. So you're starting off with a 2.9% drop. And as you look across state agencies now, you can see how it varies. It's not the same for every agency. For the Department of Education, it's slightly higher. It's closer to a 4%, 3.8% drop. For community colleges, the funding in the governor's budget is actually 13% less than it was 2 years ago. For higher ed, it's 6.8% less. I'm going to do OHSU last because that's a little different situation. For the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, it's 15% less. And for the education program as a whole, it's about 4% less. Anything that you do with the state school fund is going to dominate this figure because it's such a big portion of it. So the numbers are close to the numbers on the very left-hand side, the state school fund. So you can see there are significant differences. In OHSU, the 10% increase is due to the fact that OHSU is in the middle of a two-biennium funding that the state approved for the Oregon Opportunity Program, which is an expansion of their research programs. So this was approved. It's being financed by bonds, tobacco master settlement bonds, and there's more being provided through that program in 03-05 than there was in 01-03. Of the $200 million, it's split to something like $96 million and $104 million. You know, it's not $100 million each time. So that's showing that growth. What this number, this 10% increase, is hiding, though, is the fact that the support that the state is giving for OHSU's education and clinical programs is actually going down. So the support for the research is going up. The support for education and clinical is going down. But when you combine it all together, there's still a 10.5% increase.
Also, just to clarify, Mr. Bender, the funds that we're talking about here are the lottery funds and the general fund and those other funding sources that we talked about in the pie chart?
Exactly.
So this does not include federal funds or anything else coming into the system?
No.
Senator Mesby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just a comment and I guess maybe a request for more information. But I'm very concerned that the reductions in the governor's budget for the student assistance and the community college, because to me that magnifies the problem. As there's less assistance for students, you would think the demand for community colleges, particularly in the more rural parts of the state, is going to increase tremendously, and we're taken away from both those areas. So I would be very interested, and I'm sure this will happen in our committee meetings, a very thorough explanation of how the governor's budget is going to deal with that situation.
Yes. I would concur, Senator Mesley, that this is a really good graphic representation that shows that students in community colleges that rely on opportunity grants are in a world of hurt.
That's right.
Now, if I may refer you to the lighter colored bars, what these bars are showing for each of these programs is the reductions. Again, it's still from what you approved, sine die 2001 regular session, to what funding is available after all of the special session 5 cuts. And this also assumes, these are the numbers that will hold if Measure 28 does not pass tomorrow. So these are the full special session 5 cuts. So again, if you just, a way to interpret this.
Again, for clarification, Mr. Bender, are the $112 million in cuts that were under the November revenue forecast factored into this?
They are not, actually.
Okay.
They are not. These are the legislatively approved. So you're right. There are more. There are actually even more cuts than this, and those aren't being shown here. But if you look at, for example, the state school fund, you'll see that throughout the various five special sessions, you ended up approving reductions of almost 5% from what you had approved last regular session. So you cut the funding for the state school fund through the course of the special sessions by 5%. Now, if you look at the bar right next to it, you can see that the governor's budget restores some of that, so that after, in his budget, the cut wouldn't be 5% from anymore. It would be closer to 3%. Similarly, for higher ed, There were 10% reductions through the special session. There were, you know, those were much steeper than they were for the state school fund or for than they were for community colleges. After the governor's budget, there would be a partial restoration there. So instead of a 10% cut, you would have a closer to a 7% cut. Community colleges is the other way around. There was a 7.8% cut after the fifth special session, but there are additional cuts in the governor's budget, so that the reduction goes from 7.8% to 13.2%. So this shows you that within the educational program, and again, this is the 100,000-foot level, there's a lot of things going on, and we'll have to spend a lot of time looking at to see what the actual costs are as opposed to just what the funding is. But this does give you some overview as to, you know, these budgets are in different situations.
Madam Chair.
Senator Miss.
I'm a little confused here because Ballot Measure 28 only funds those categories through June 30th.
Yes.
And so how was this going to affect the 2003-2005 budget? Isn't this graph only show what's going to happen between now and June 30th? And my concern, if that's true, is what is it going to cost us as we roll this up into the next budget? I've heard it's a pretty high figure.
This chart actually is showing, the light colored bars shows what's happened between now and June 30th, right, if Measure 28 passes, and the darker bars show what happens next session. So not next session, this next biennium, after June 30th. So the light bars is before June 30th, the dark bars is after June 30th.
Madam Chair, maybe if I could ask a little different way. If we were going to maintain Ballot Measure 28 services at that level into the next budget, and that's going to be for a 24-month period as opposed to a 4 or 5 month period, I think it would be very helpful to know what that cost is.
We will be getting you information on that. Yes, there will be. There are significant costs of doing that. If you look at the next chart now, this next chart has the same information as the other chart, except this shows what happens this biennium prior to June 30th if Measure 28 passes. And actually, the way that these are put together, you could probably look at both of them at once. Mm-hmm. And that might be a little helpful, because if you line them up and look at both of them, the first thing you'll notice is that the darker colored bars are the same on both charts. So, for example, the state school fund is reduced by 2.9% in the governor's budget whether or not Measure 28 passes. What that means is that in the governor's, if Measure 28 passes, there will be an extra $411 million for the 03-05 biennium, which is what the darker colored bars are referencing, but the governor has not indicated or specified where any of that money is to go. Now, I don't know. They may, if it passes tomorrow, the governor may be coming out with his ideas of where that $411 million should go. But as of now, that has not been done. So when we look at this, there's no change in the darker colored bars. For the lighter colored bars, though, that's showing what's happening before June 30th. You can see how the reductions are less. So then, this, you know, if Measure 28 passes, state school fund support is only cut 3.1% instead of 4.9% this biennium. And if you look at what that means, is that means that then there's not, you know, basically next biennium, you have the same funding in the governor's budget pretty much as you have this biennium, because those two numbers
again,
are very close.
Mr. Bender, just to clarify, my understanding is that the governor's recommended budget continues the cuts that will be in place at wherever they end up falling at the end of the 01-03 biennium, but his 03-05 budget assumes that the Measure 28 cuts will be in place, and so he doesn't continue those programs in his 03-05 budget. Is that a correct assumption?
That is correct, and that is why Well, yes, that is correct. In general, they have taken the cuts that are approved if Measure 28 fails, and they've rolled them forward and biennialized them, and those reductions are within the governor's recommended budget. When you start looking at this more closely, you'll see that the way that these were biennialized and rolled forward vary a lot from agency to agency. So that's something you're going to have to look into. I mean, yes, that's what was done, but there's more to it than that, because you really have to look to see how it was done in each case.
So what you're additionally saying then is, if Measure 28 passes, we're going to be in kind of a double bind here, because some of the services that Measure 28 will continue aren't funded in the governor's budget.
That's correct. What will happen is that some of the services that Measure 28 will continue, we will not be able to continue to fund through 03, 05. They're not funded at all in the governor's budget, because the governor's budget doesn't take any of that $411 million and distribute it. But even if you do take the full $411 million and distribute it, you will find that you will not be able to fully fund all of those additional services throughout the biennium.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Mr. Bender, given what you just said, is there a way to present that information in written form so that we can actually visualize what we're talking about?
I believe, Senator, I can do that. What I would not be able to do is do it on an agency-by-agency basis. So it would have to be a overall state government budget type of situation.
That would be very helpful.
I'll see what I can do, and I'll confer with my supervisors on that to make sure I get the right numbers to you.
Mr. Bender, if Measure 28 passes, we would probably assume that the cuts that were described underneath of it simply won't take place. But we already know that there's some confusion about whether some of the cuts can take place at all because of the legality of them. So I guess where I'm coming from is, there's going to be a period where it's really confused about what's actually going to end up happening. And is the governor going to make any attempts to adjust his 03-05 budget based on the outcome of that, or is he just going to leave that to the legislative arena?
My honest answer is, I don't know. He may have already made some comments on that, and I'm sorry, I just don't know. But I will try to find that out. I have not heard specifically that the governor will do that, though. Then he may be doing that. I just don't know. Are there any questions about these charts? I know they can be a bit confusing, but hopefully this gives you some kind of idea of what type of situation these various budgets are in. I thought it would also be helpful to provide one final view of what the situations of the various budgets are in, and that's on the last chart, which looks very different than the other two. But if you think about it, all this chart is trying to do is, instead of comparing how things have changed since the 2001 session, it's saying how have things changed since the 1999 session.
Right.
So this gives you just a very slightly longer-term view of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what this shows is how the funding has changed compared to what was approved back in 1999. So that's 4 years ago. And you can see that here, there's also considerable variation in how the agencies' budgets are performing. The state school fund amount is 6% higher than it was 4 years ago, which, when you look at student enrollment growth, inflation, increasing compensation costs, 6%, you know, doesn't cover those cost increases. But other agency budgets are in even worse shape. Higher ed is up only 3.8% from 4 years ago. Community colleges, under the governor's proposal, not only are they down, down 13% from last session, they're even down 5.4% from two sessions ago. So Student Assistance Commission is down from what it was two sessions ago. Again, OHSU, the reason why that's sticking out like that is because this was two sessions ago, you weren't funding the Oregon Opportunity Program at all. So when that money came in, it's essentially doubled the support for OHSU for this two biennium period. That's a limited program. It's not expected to be funded after 2003-05, except for debt service on the bonds, which will continue for 20 years.
And also, again, just to clarify, these funds are the same funds that are in this pie chart.
Yes.
So this doesn't include federal funds.
Correct.
Questions, comments, heart attacks?
It's going to be fun.
One final thing I just wanted to mention is please be aware that in this, we have a new sound system here in the hearing rooms, and particularly in this one, it is very sensitive, and we found that it picks up all conversations. So if you're just having a conversation with your neighbor, please assume that it will be broadcast throughout the building and on the tapes, in the formal tapes. So that's just wanted to make you aware of it.
Madam Chair, in years past we've had notepads. Could we have those put back on our desk?
Oh.
I'm getting the message real strong.
We will do that. Senator Mesley, any other questions, comments? Are you done, Steve?
I'm done unless you have any questions.
Then with no further business before the committee this morning, I'll adjourn the meeting with the understanding that we will not meet tomorrow, and we'll be back here at 8:30 on Wednesday morning.
Susan, are we going to... You said actually...